and welcome to episode 54 of Divided by Werewolves. I am Brandon. I am here. Mitch is here too. And let's see, it's September, which is odd because I don't know about you. I know that hurricane, like, I know logically hurricane season is from, what's it, like July to November. But for me, like, hurricanes just seem like a summer thing, that for there to be a, you know, category two bearing down on the Carolinas, and it's like, it's September, soon to be fall. It just doesn't seem right to me.
Yeah. I know. And like, I saw some crazy shit the other day, and I didn't investigate further, and I'm pretty sure it was fake. It has to be fake. But somebody tweeted something, and I was like, oh shit, it's happening. I got so excited. But it wasn't like a link to an actual story on like weather.com.
Oh.
It was just a screenshot, but it was like sharks are being lifted into the hurricane, and I was like, oh shit.
Sharknado.
It's finally happening for real. But no, it was just a screen grab, which led me to believe it was bullshit. So
yeah. Yeah, what's funny
now
is
that I wish that upon our fellow, you know, our neighbors to the north. I don't want there to be a Sharknado in the Carolinas, but
well, yeah, but you know what, as that would be par for the course, I think, as things have been going. I think a tornado of man-eating sharks is probably right on cue. And of course, we're, you know, now that September has hit, we are full. I think it's pretty, this is the, you know, the summer movie season of games. So,
yes, sir.
Let's see. So, Forsaken hit last week, Spider-Man hit last week, Shadow of the Tomb Raider hits this week. And it's all just going to be kind of fast and furious, from there.
Yep.
So I have Shadow of the Tomb Raider on route from Gamefly. I have no idea when I'm going to play it, but I don't care because I'm, you know, we talked about this before. I'm kind of just taking shit as it comes. I'm not going to try to rush through a game I'm enjoying just to play a game that is not going anywhere.
Right.
So let's get to it. So first on the list, a game that I've just been having a blast with, getting back to our roots, is the Forsaken expansion of Destiny 2. So we had talked on the last show how, you know, kind of getting back into it was fun. And, man, it's such a great time because you're in that honeymoon period where, you know, you're just getting drops all the time. Yep. And they're all better, you know. Yeah. And so it's that, you know, and it was this way when Taken King hit as well. But you know, at the same time, not to make it sound like what has kind of revitalized the game is just, you know, the level cap moving forward, so drops mean more. I think the changes they made to make certain activities that give you stuff happen more frequently, I think that's a huge help. Sure. You know, it used to be you'd log in on Tuesday and you'd be done on Tuesday because there was very little to do. Yeah. You know, if you went and did your it was a flashpoint, I forget what it was called, the thing for Cade. Did your flashpoint between that and your Crucible stuff, that would knock out your clan XP for the week. I mean, I used to log in the morning. I'd do Crucible matches in the morning. I'd maybe have to do one more while watching TV, do the flashpoint, and I'd be done. And I was like, okay, I guess I'll come back in a week. And then, you know, you're just like, well, why am I coming back?
Right, yeah.
So resetting that stuff was a huge, you know, was a huge boon. I'm digging the story so far. You know, I'm interested to see kind of how the fights with some of the other barons, and I think them gating it, you know, to where, okay, you know, you can do some story stuff, but then we're going to make it so that you've got to take these guys out, but, you know, you've got to progress in power in order to do it. Was smart. What I'm not sure about is, you know, there's always like multiple caps in Destiny, right? And depending on where you are in those bands determines like what is going to drop for you and what you can get from certain activities. And I haven't like spent a lot of time, you know, kind of looking into that, but you always end up in this band where normal things are not going to drop for you. You know, turning in tokens to vendors are not going to get you anything you need, but you're right. not powered up enough to do things like the Nightfall or the Raid. So you're in this, like, you know, this kind of phantom zone of not really having a lot of activities to get you what you need. And when things do drop, they're really only a few points kind of above where you are. Now, in Destiny 1, that was when the Iron Banner Fairy came to town. You would just fucking, like, I mean, I loved Iron Banner. For someone who hates multiplayer, I loved Iron Banner because, one, I fucking kicked ass in it, but also you could get so many great drops. And Destiny 2 Iron Banner wasn't the same way. So I'm kind of curious as to whether it's going to be the same way, if there'll be a greater, you know, if the focus was on end game activities and moving forward, if that focus is going to carry through to that kind of phantom zone where, you know, hopefully it doesn't feel like that.
Yeah. Like you said, we're in that honeymoon period right now where we haven't hit the soft cap yet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, every blue we get is going to be higher than, you know, we're going to be making progress until we hit 500.
See, and I've actually been getting a lot of lowered blues, which I think is a good sign personally.
Yeah. Well, so like, yeah. So like if we go, like we're trying to do, you know, we go to the EDZ for the Flashpoint and we do public events, then the rewards from the public events are lower.
Yeah.
But once we hit that Flashpoint, you know, you're getting some good shit, right?
Right.
And, but once we hit 500, yeah, that's where the real grind is going to come in. And that's where sort of everybody who has, you know, rushed through to the soft cap is stuck, or not stuck, but like, is like, you know, that's when you really figure out what the end game is going to be like. You know,
right.
You shoot the soft cap, you finish the story, and then it's like, you know, the Flashpoint really becomes important. But thankfully, because like you said, it was Flashpoint, Crucible, and then that got your clan and you're done.
Yeah.
And I wonder if their idea was that initially, like for Destiny 2, was that since everybody, not everybody, but typically players these days for Destiny have all three classes, you know.
Oh yeah, they would just rotate through.
Right. They're like, well shit, if it takes a day or two for each character.
Right.
If everybody does all three, then by, you know, by the weekend, they may just do Crucible, and then on Tuesday they're ready to start over.
Right.
And we've talked about this before, like the fan base is so like voracious for Destiny, you know?
They're thirsty.
Yeah. I mean, I think it has to have taken Bungie by surprise where they're just like, these motherfuckers won't stop playing. Like, we can't put enough content.
I have never, and maybe it's just because, I mean, I'm more attuned to Destiny than I am any other game. I have never seen a game that has such a high ratio of avid players to complainers. Like, these motherfuckers I don't know what, you know, like I used to say about my kids, like, they like watching YouTube videos about games more than they like playing games. I think, like, it's like Destiny players. Like, it reminds me, there is a, I don't know if you ever used to watch Frasier, but there was one scene in Frasier where Frasier and Niles go out to dinner, and they come back, and the father, whose name I can't remember, asks them, how was dinner? And they proceeded to tell some story about how it was pretty much great except for one small thing. So Niles was like, so it was almost, you know, it was an impeccable evening spoiled by one niggling detail. And the father goes, so basically perfect. And Frasier's like, absolutely. Like, and that to me is that it's like, it's people they will not stop playing it. Like, the complaints you read where people are like, I've put 500 hours in this game and here's all the reasons why it sucks. And I'm like, right, motherfucker, you know there's more games out there, right? Like, you know, right, there's other things you can play. Like, I'll give you $60 if that's the problem. Like, but I think it's right, just they really like it and they're super invested in it and they want, what they want is impossible, right? They want every time they log on to have something of value to do.
Right.
And it's just not possible.
Right.
You know,
like, you know, you can bitch about vanilla Destiny 1, vanilla Destiny 2 all you want to, but at the end of the day, you're complaining. Like, I own lots of games that I played for maybe 10 hours.
Yeah.
And they went away.
Yeah.
For it. I was just done because that was the game. You know, and it's, you know, we live in the era, unfortunately, the age of the DLC and all. Like fucking, they were advertising this first Spider-Man DLC pack before the game came out.
Yeah.
Like, this is the age we live in. And people are just fucking spoiled. It's like, they want, you know, fucking fuckers on YouTube want to make a living.
Oh, yeah.
Make videos about a game. And when they're silent enough to do, they bitch and complain.
I'm yeah.
Like, that's not Bungie's. Bungie's responsibility isn't to give you enough shit to do to make a goddamn video every day.
But you know what? The reality is they'll get more hits bitching and moaning about Destiny than they will if there was content.
Yep.
I mean, that's the sad reality. I mean, for me, it always came down to I just wanted to know that there was one thing – that there was something I could do, because I wasn't what somebody who was like in Destiny 2, I take that back. Maybe prior to the first expansion, mm-hmm. I don't know if I've ever gotten to the point where I actually technically had like maxed out my light level. Mm-hmm. It got to the point where I felt like the only way to get anything that would help push that forward was to either raid or Nightfall. And yes. I don't have the time. I just don't have the time to raid. I mean, I would have to put aside an entire evening and go well into the night. And then for Nightfalls, I mean, you know, there was just no, you know, when they first started and they had a timer and all that shit, it was like, it was no guarantee. Right, yeah. So
they ruined Nightfalls out of the gate for this one. I have the time to raid. My issue is that I refuse to play with the public. So mm-hmm. like LFG and shit like that, mm-hmm. I'm not interested.
Fuck that noise, yeah. So for me, it wasn't even necessarily like I need something brand new every day. Like I'll run – I love strikes. I love mm-hmm. strikes. Even the mm-hmm. shitty ones that I like to complain about, like Pyramidian or – I fucking love doing strikes. So if I can do a strike every day – and get a drop, even if it's just 2 or 3 points better than something right. I currently have, I'm happy to do it. I don't right. mind. I'll just sit up there, watch TV, and do a strike and be happy. But mm. but it was when it got to the point where, you know, most of the time, the activities that were available to me in the time frame that I had and at the skill level I was wouldn't push me forward. And at yeah. that point, you go, okay, if it's between – you know, playing Destiny, and obviously, you know, playing with another, with a friend takes precedence. Like, I'll do anything with, you know, if a friend sure. is like, hey, let's go do whatever. Yeah, that sure, who cares? Yeah. But if I'm by myself, and I'm just playing Destiny just for the sake of playing it, when you've done mm-hmm. everything, yeah. why wouldn't I go play something else at that point?
Exactly. Yep.
So my hope is that, you know, this is something where there's value in kind of, you know, checking in once a week and having a bunch of stuff that you could to do that doesn't take just a day. I mean, I'm still not thrilled with the idea of having to like, you know, like the systems for infusing and things like that, because I feel like what they've done is they've said, well, we're not going to necessarily give you new stuff to do or stuff that's going to drop things that make you better. We are just going to make you do chores for materials. And to me, that's not the same thing. And I know for other people, especially because what a lot of people wanted in this, I don't get is, you know, the random rolls.
Random rolls.
And yeah. to go, oh, okay.
Based around that.
I didn't get the gun I want. I'm going to go do this huge thing all over again and hope I get some. Fuck that. I got no interest in that. I'm not a good enough player to know the difference, honestly, with all these perks anyway.
It's not only that, but I question, since you and I are primarily PvE players and not PvP, I think we both would say that.
Yeah.
You know, right. So the random rolls, I feel like if the version of that gun I got takes one or two more pulls of the right trigger, is that really
– Right.
Is it really worth us doing this shit again in the hopes that right. maybe we get that? Like, no, fuck that.
Right, right. I think you're right, though. I mean, for PvE or for raiding, if you have a purpose, right? Like, I think that's the difference. And you and I, our purpose is different. Like, when I remember talking to John about, like, doing a raid, I think this is when we were going to do the one for Taken King. And he was like, you know, like, it was like a list you would give to somebody if they were going to Lowe's, right? Like, you were going to build a deck. And I'm just sitting here going, I don't know. First of all, I'm not entirely convinced you're speaking English right now. Right. But second of all, I think I have one thing on this list. I had a sniper rifle that could do the kind of damage. And I'm like, look, here's how this is going to go. You get me and whoever and my character as of the day I raid. I'm not doing any homework. I'm not doing any chores. If my number matches up that number, I'm ready to go. If I need a certain weapon or armor or boots or this, that, or the other, it's just not going to happen because I am not going to do homework just so that I can raid. Because I genuinely, I've missed out on like every single raid that's ever dropped. I didn't do it when it came out. In fact, I didn't do it until way after most of them came out. And I don't feel like the raid experience itself was good enough to change my mind so that I would be ready to do it for other ones. I think they're – honestly, I think they're okay.
Yeah, I enjoy the raids just because, like, I don't know, that was a new thing for me. Like, I'm not a WoW person. I'm not a PC person, whatever. And so, like, when Vault of Glass came out, I was nowhere near, like, ready to do any kind of a raid where I was at Destiny at that time. But, you know, when Crota first hit, when Crota came out, Dark Below, whatever, if you had a Gjallarhorn, like...
Oh, yeah, and that's Jesus. That's the other thing, right? Is like when you see these videos and people were like, if you have this particular weapon, you can get the raid done in 60 seconds. Right. And then you're like, okay, so, great. You might as well say, if you got balls made of gold, you can shit quarters. Okay, good to know. Like,
But when Crota happened, I had a Gjallarhorn. And I had friends were actively playing Destiny every night. And so if they saw me on, they'd be like, you want a raid? And I was like, sure. Because Destiny raids come in two different sort of incarnations, right? So there's the Vault of Glass, which takes, I don't know, for me, I'm sure people could do it all in one night. But for me, it took multiple days to complete because it's so fucking long and so mechanic heavy.
Right.
And then there's shit like Crota,
Which is sword fly to a room and then shoot a horned guy for 10 minutes.
Right. So it's like it's not as mechanic heavy. It's more focused on like the combat and knowing what to do and when to do it. Those are the ones I like.
Yeah.
And that's why it sucks that I never got to play Wrath of the Machine, because Wrath of the Machine, I hated the first Taken King, King's Fall, whatever the fuck it was.
I don't remember that one. Oh, the raid. Yeah. Okay. Yep. The raid. Yeah. Well, Wrath of the Machine.
Times I did that, it was fucking terrible because everybody that I played that raid with had a different way to do everything, and they expected me to know what that was. Yeah. And I was like, motherfucker, last week we did it a different. I don't even know how y'all are coming up with all this shit.
Yeah. Well, we could still do Wrath of the Machine King. Like you said, it'll just be low level and we'll just burn through it.
Well, I mean, we'd have to go back to D1 also, but.
I thought that was. That's not Destiny 2?
No, that's the last raid in D1 was Wrath of the Machine or whatever, and I never got to do it.
Oh, fuck that. Never mind then. Never mind. All right, so, I mean, we could spend an entire episode talking about Destiny, but I'm not sure we should. But anyway, I'm glad I got it because I was, you know, I was on the fence. So I'm super glad that I got it. I've already gotten my money's worth as far as you know, kind of what the expansions are. I think those I'm definitely going to wait for because I just don't have a very good understanding of what they are. But, you know.
And Bungie didn't do themselves any favor with Osiris, which was ridiculous. And I liked Warmind, but I can see why so many people did not.
Yeah.
You know, think they got their money's worth, so. Yeah, we'll see how this goes.
Well, I think too, because when they're like, well, it's not story, I'm like, well, then I don't know, I don't understand what it is. So, I mean, it's a $5 difference, right? Like, if you bought it with Forsaken, it was $30. If you bought it on its own, it's $35. I think it's, well, for me anyway, it's worth paying the extra $5 in the hopes that I could save money if it turns out to not be something for me.
Exactly.
So, all right. So you had mentioned Spider-Man. I thought this was interesting. Like when I went to pick up my Spider-Man PS4, PS Pro, which by the way is fucking gorgeous. It's fucking gorgeous. Like I wish I had a place to display it. And I don't care. Like, if it did not come with a copy of Spider-Man, I would not have given a shit. Honestly, I wouldn't have cared. It's so nice. It's so pretty, and the controller is so nice. But yeah, like when I went to pick it up, the fucking manager was like asking whether the version in the game had the DLC in it, and the guy who was behind the counter was like, "Yeah, it has it." And I'm like, "Look, motherfucker, do not for one goddamn second fucking upsell me on DLC when you have a thing right now on your website that says if you trade in Spider-Man by October 7th, you're guaranteed $30. Do not fucking upsell me shit that is not coming out until undisclosed time. Let's be honest, December would be it would be conservative to say that all the DLC for Spider-Man will be out by December. Don't fucking do that. Don't try to sell me $25 worth of extra shit at the same time you're telling people if they finish the game in a month, you'll give them $30. Fuck you on that bullshit. I fucking hate GameStop. It kills me that Best Buy is getting rid of the GCU.
Ooh.
Because I know a lot of people have had problems with GameStop, or sorry, with Best Buy. I personally have never had a problem with Best Buy. Everything's been fine. I was more than happy to just keep feeding into that ecosystem, get the 10% on trades, get the 20% discount on new games, and I was happy to run that cycle fucking all day long. Once they murked that shit, sorry, homie, I gotta get paid. Like, I gotta go where the money is. And unfortunately, that's this sleazy ass motherfucker on the street corner.
I know. Fuck Best Buy forever now. Like,
I don't like GameStop's policies, but at the end of the day, I got, you know what? These fucking games ain't gonna pay for themselves. And I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I mean, I have the money. I don't like to, like, if I have games that are just sitting there collecting space, because I'm not a collector by any stretch of the imagination. So I'll just, you know, kind of trade him in. But anyway, getting to Spider-Man, it's great. It's great.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, despite the fact that this is some, you know, Assassin's Creed level Ubi open world shit with like, you know, the only difference between this and an Ubisoft open world game is the fact that you could go anywhere from jump, which you could do. In Origins, you just get the fucking shit kicked out of you. You know, that's the only difference, is that you can go anywhere in the city that you want. It's, you know, the enemies, they're not going to be any more of a problem in Central Park than they are in Midtown. It really is like the kind of the enemy progression and the collectible progression is entirely tied to story, which so far I'm really digging the story. I love just it's a great depiction of Peter Parker. The costumes, though, holy shit, the suits, dude, the suits are so good. The suits are so good, and they draw on so many different areas of Spider-Man. And I got to tell you, like, I've been fucking going crazy. I'm sure the people who follow me on Twitter are like, all right, dude, enough. But the fucking photo mode,
I love those tweets,
is on point. The Horizon Zero Dawn photo mode was amazing. The Uncharted photo mode, Spider-Man photo mode, the only thing I wish is that it's kind of clunky when you are mid-swing to access photo mode. Like, because you have to hit the start menu. So when you're like web swinging and it really does take some trial and error. Like, if you just want to do a selfie, that's fine. But to actually get like the cool shots when you're, you know, like mid swing and everything, you can argue, you know, whether it does any as far as an open world game, like whether it does anything new and that type of thing. And I think those are valid points to make, but as a Spider-Man game, the feeling of the traversal, like I have fast travel unlocked, and for the most part, I never use it because it is so fun to swing through the city, and you get experience for they're not challenges, they're benchmarks. There's you get experience for traversal benchmarks and for combat benchmarks. I love, and here's why. I love swinging at, like, you know, 3-4 feet above, like, car level above the ground. Because, and here's why. If Spider-Man was real and I lived in New York City, how fucking great would that be to see him swing down the street? Not like in a fight, you know, not where I felt like I was in danger or people could get hurt. But he's just going from point – like, wouldn't that be – I think eventually you would take it for granted. But wouldn't that just be – it's the reason why every time I watch Superman Returns – and he comes back, I cry. I tear up every time he stops, because I think to myself, what would it be like to live in a world with Superman and he leaves?
Yeah, exactly.
And then he comes back.
Yep.
Like, how would that feel? And that's what I feel when I watch that. And it's the same thing here. I like to swing street level, skimming the tops of the cabs. Because I just think, man, if I lived in New York City, which, let me tell you, there is no amount of money you could pay me to fucking live in New York City. Nothing against my friend. Like, you know, I do have a bit of a chip on my shoulder because I'm from upstate New York. And New York, and people who live in New York City think there's New York City. But then there's everything other part of New York that nobody gives a shit about. But just to feel, what would it be like to live in Midtown, live in the Bronx or whatever, or not the Bronx, it's the wrong borough, but live in, like, you know, in Manhattan and see Spidey just zipping by day to day. I think that'd be fucking great. Yeah. But they make it so easy to just get around the city and just have fun while you're doing it. Like, I bought a skill. I could have been, like, bulletproof or combat. And I'm like, oh, I want the one where I get experience for flips. Like... And I use it all the time. And it's not just because experience is hard to come by. It's because if I can be fucking zipping through the air and pulling off these badass tricks, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly. Same thing with – I know that game, unfortunately, is constantly and will always be compared to the Batman Arkham games. But
there's a difference, like, though.
There is. I mean, I'm sure there is. Like, I haven't played it yet, but and I truly hope there is. But what Arkham did – that was so good was that it had a story, it had great combat, and it made being Batman going from point A to point B so much fun.
Right.
And that's exactly what you should want from a fucking Spider-Man game. Fuck the fast travel. Why would you ever do that?
Yeah. I think that
Spider-Man.
The difference, honestly, between it and Arkham is I honestly feel like the combat in Spider-Man is harder.
I've read that,
and it's simply because in order to be successful in Spider-Man, you've got to work the verticality into it.
Sure,
and you know, Batman was very ground focused, but there were very few enemies that had guns, and there were, like, things you could do to mobilize them. But, like, Spider-Man, there's guys. I mean. There's so many different type of enemies that either will try to shoot you or that can't be hit a certain way. And so the battlefield awareness that you need to do and how much damage he can take before he dies is a lot less than Batman. That's how it should be, I guess.
But, I agree, except for maybe the damage part. But absolutely, it's like Spider-Man should have more dangerous enemies, not necessarily because I think that New York City is more dangerous than Gotham, but just for the fact that what Spider-Man can do versus what Batman can do, you said, the verticality and everything else, you almost have to have that, or it's not. I don't want to say realistic because it's a fucking comic book.
Well, but the difference is what ends up happening is that you and so Russ Pitts, he's the EIC of the newly revamped Escapist. He wrote. The review for Spider-Man, and I recommend people go read it because his description of the combat is point on. When you're in the flow, you just feel amazing. You're just zipping back and forth across the battlefield. You're taking guys out. You're webbing guys up, whatever, using all your gadgets. When you're not, you just feel completely like a guy who just bought a costume from Party City.
Right.
And with Batman, I always felt like there was a way that I could turn the tide of a fight that was going poorly and still end up feeling like Batman. And with Spider-Man, there are a lot of – there's like these mini – they're called Brutes. Mm. I call them mini Kingpins. And unfortunately, they'll chain their hits, whereas if you get hit once, you get hit three times.
Gotcha.
And so it's just – you know, I kind of tweeted out that I was a much worse Spider-Man than I was a Batman. And I think that in part, like Batman, the use of gadgets and stuff was, it was like button presses as opposed to Spider-Man where you got to open up a wheel and then pick things. And that's the key, you know, the difference is, you know, Spider-Man, they did this really cool mechanic where every suit you unlock has a special suit ability, but it's not tied to that suit. It's just unlocking that suit unlocks that ability. So, for example, if you unlock the Mark II armor and you could be bulletproof, well, you can wear the classic costume and just be bulletproof. You can mix and match the suit powers with the suits, which is genius because, you know, it lets you play around with things and it lets you and you can be in the middle of a fight and be like, oh, shit, there's a lot of guys with guns. I'm going to be bulletproof, or oh shit, I want the Iron Spidey arms, or I want the Web Blossom, or I want, you know, whatever. So it doesn't have to be like if you enter a fight and you realize this is not the right suit power, you can change that out, and then the suits are just strictly cosmetic. But that's the suits are so awesome that it really does. Like I always kind of throw a new one on, and then I see how it looks. And the reality is at this point, I like the suit from the game the best, but I saw a bunch that I haven't unlocked yet. And all I can say is when I get that fucking Spirit Spidey with the Ghost Rider head. Yeah.
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah. That's it. Awesome. That's done and done right there on that motherfucker.
Like I said, I pre-ordered it. I was on the fence anyway, because I have so much other shit to play. And like, I know this is going to be cheap on Black Friday or cheaper. But once I saw that Best Buy's like exclusive pre-order bonus was the punk Spider-Man skin. I was like, pre-ordering it, done, pre-ordering it.
Yeah.
And of course I ended up not getting it, but.
Well, you know, the reality is the nice thing is all the suits you can get, even if, you know, even the pre-order ones, you know, it gives you a little bit, but yeah, you can get all the suits through progressing through the game.
Yeah.
It's just purchase. So the way it works is that if there's bases, you take out a base, you get base tokens. If you do all the, all the optional things for a base, you get more, if you fight, you know, there'll be a little like crimes that take place. You do those, you get crime tokens to research, you do research tokens, all that shit. All the suits and everything is just purchased through tokens. And the nice thing is, especially for the bases, if you go, you know what, I don't want to spend a bunch of time trying to do this base and fight six waves of enemies and do all this. I just want to do this one base that I can zip through in 10 minutes. And immobilize everybody in a stealthy way and get one token. You can just keep doing it over and over and over and over and over. So all the suits are available for purchase in the game. Some of them are tied to getting all of a certain type of collectibles. You know, like for example, if you get all of the backpacks, you get the suit that he wore Homecoming.
Homecoming.
After Tony takes his suit. So the goggles and the sweatshirt and things like that. So just because you haven't pre-ordered it, you haven't missed out on anything. And honestly, I never used any of those suit powers. But it's not going anywhere. So definitely, you know, wait until you got the time. Because it's the type of game that once you start playing it, like I thought, okay, well, once Tomb Raider ships, I'll probably switch gears. Fuck that. I'm playing Spider-Man until this shit is done. It's just so much fun. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. So, wow, that was a loud clap. Sorry about that.
I like it.
So we have a couple movies. Yeah, we have a couple movies to talk about. Which one you want to do first?
I'd probably Death Wish, unless you don't feel the same way. Like I feel like I have less to say about Death Wish.
I have no, absolutely. So first one is Death Wish, Bruce Willis, directed by Eli Roth. You know, the original Death Wish came out at a much, I don't know, it was just a different time, I guess. Yeah. You know, Charles Bronson's family is, you know, murdered, raped and murdered, I think. He goes and he kills people. That was pretty much it.
Yep.
And so not necessarily that we live in a more enlightened age, so to speak, but just I think I don't know. I think the idea of somebody taking the law into their own hands and just randomly murdering criminals is a little – I don't know if it's tone deaf in today's day. I don't know. It just feels out of place. I feel in a certain way like Eli Roth made this movie as less of a well, let's just make a good movie and more of like trying to – I don't know, like, make Death Wish to own the libs. Like, I don't know. Like, it just felt unnecessary. And I hate to say that a movie is unnecessary because just from the standpoint of putting food on people's tables, like, you know, it's totally worth it. But as in the year of our Lord, 2000, I guess it was it 18 or 17 that it came out?
It was this year.
Okay. So in 2018, this type of movie just feels like way out of place. Like way – I don't know if – like again, I don't know if tone deaf is the right word. But it just seems just like a – I don't know, like part of a – it reminds me of when you talk about when Times Square used to be all porno movies and hookers. And now Times Square is just this fucking cathedral of capitalism.
Right.
And tourism. Like this Death Wish feels more of that idea of a big city and less of what it feels like now. Even though it's set in Chicago, which still has, you know, a tragically high, you know, murder rate.
Sure. Yeah, I agree completely. Like I don't – again, I don't want to call it unnecessary, but I wonder like what – the point really was.
Yeah.
Because watching it, it has some really good people in it, you know.
It did.
Even D'Onofrio, who's like, to me, that dude is like on another level.
Oh, and yeah. Yeah.
Everybody in it was sort of like paint by numbers.
Although I thought it was weird. Did you feel like they were trying to make it so that he was the one who was behind the break-in?
No, I didn't. No.
I totally got that. I kept expecting that they were going to somehow – because, you know, he needed money.
Yeah. Like, you know, you're right, though. It never occurred to me.
And so I was just – and I was like, I'm glad that they didn't because I was like, please,
that would have been ridiculous,
please do not make it so that that unshaven kingpin – which, by the way, if you ever want to just understand the range that this motherfucker has, watch this movie – where you're like, they literally could have gotten anyone to do this role.
Anybody.
And then watch Daredevil and be like, holy shit, is that the same murderous motherfucker? Like, I was scared of Kingpin. I was afraid that motherfucker was going to come to my house. I felt bad rooting for Daredevil because I was like, I do not want that bald motherfucker showing up on my front porch.
Once you decapitate a person by slamming their head into a door.
Oh my God, I hate that. That scene and the scene in Kill Bill where she kills, I can't do it. The twitching of the feet and the bam, bam, bam. I can't do it.
But yeah, like, and it's Eli Roth, right? So I'd seen the trailer and I'm like, all right, whatever. It's the Death Wish remake that nobody asked for, never should have been done. But it's Eli Roth, which makes me interested, right? And then I'm like, all right. But then I start watching it, and it gets to the, you know, there's whatever bullshit at the start, this and that. But once the shit pops off, like it's supposed to in Death Wish, I was surprised, honestly, at how tame it was.
Yes.
So what happened? Because I expect – it's Eli Roth, dude. I'm expecting, like, to, like, hate myself for watching it.
I mean, there's a good amount of – when you consider within the confines of an action movie, there is a decent amount of gore, like, when he was kind of torturing the one guy and then the jack fell.
Yeah, I'm sure, but I thought what was going to set this off was going to make me, like, you know, need to go take a shower before I continue.
Mm-hmm.
And – because that's sort of what I expect.
Because he did the shit, the Cannibal Holocaust remake.
Yeah,
Green Inferno, which was nasty. But yeah.
It sure was. And I expected, and after seeing Death Wish, you know, Jeff Goldblum is fucking repulsive in Death Wish.
And, wait, who is Jeff Goldblum in Death Wish?
He's one of the gangsters that rapes and murders the wife and daughter.
Wait, in this Death Wish?
No, the old one.
Oh, okay.
So, like...
okay.
I'm ready for Eli Roth's version of that scene, and then...
Which I was glad to see nobody got raped. Like, I was glad to see that.
I'm not saying I wanted that.
No, I'm just
saying, based on what I expected, and knowing who the director, I was like, this is going to make me hate myself.
Yeah.
And it was so tame. And then it was also really odd to me that Bruce Willis, who is playing it straight-laced, he's a doc, surgeon, whatever, and then he sees a fucking infomercial with Britney Spears, who loves guns.
The Jackie Brown, that was my favorite. One of my favorite parts of Jackie Brown is the late night infomercial with all the girls in bikinis shooting assault rifles. You know, yeah.
Yeah, and then suddenly he's like, he becomes a fucking Terminator.
Yeah, but
like,
you know what? That's actually, I'm glad you mentioned that. That was one of the only things about the movie that I actually liked was this idea that, there was a time when if you wanted to buy a gun, learn how to clean a gun, learn how to shoot a gun, you had to talk to other people about that. Right. So maybe if then you did something with that gun and the police were investigating, they would be like, oh, yeah, there was this guy. But how much of that you could just get on YouTube right now?
Yeah,
you could learn, here's a guy, he's a surgeon, so he's good at memorizing things and he's good with his hands. So he just watches a bunch of YouTube videos and he learns how to strip a weapon, clean a weapon. You know, he's got the patience to fire it. Like that was the only part of the movie that I could genuinely go, yeah, that makes sense.
Right. But it was so funny to me how he was so, again, a decent normal dude, and then it takes watching one infomercial, and he's fucking
– yeah.
The very next scene he's in, he's like – he's talking to Vincent Knopfler. He's like, well, they just get away scot-free. No one's going to do anything, so now I have to do it.
Right, and that made no sense. Like, especially because he was a doctor, right? Like in that first scene, it would have made more sense if in that very first scene when he tells the cop, hey, your partner's dead, he's like, well, you're going to go save the piece of shit who killed him? He's like, I'm going to try. Like if he like fucking killed that guy, like in surgery, he just was like, no, don't do anything. Or he did something to make you feel like he already has it out. That would be more understanding. Exactly. But just to be like, oh, I'm not even going to throw down at a soccer fight, but now I'm going to get in a fucking shootout in goddamn middle of South Side of Chicago? What the fuck is that? Yeah.
You know, it was funny to me, like the way that he switched characters so often, and to be honest with you, at an hour and 46 minutes, this felt like a long movie.
It really did, absolutely.
But with the way that almost he would change on the fly, you would have expected this to be a 70-minute movie where they had to get there quicker. Yep. But it was almost 2 hours, and still, like the snap, like the way his character would change from one scene to the next. Like he's the fucking Punisher.
Yeah,
he's in that garage.
Yep.
And then, but then they call him. He's like, your daughter woke up. He's like, no, I'm good.
You know what I thought was funny? I said to my wife, I was like, look, I don't know how comas work, but I'm pretty sure they're not naps. You can't come out of a coma on Monday and go home on Tuesday. Like, it doesn't work. And then she's at dinner, and she's talking to Uncle Kingpin, and she's like, well, I got to do all this therapy to teach my body how to work. And then 2 minutes later, she's like, dishes are done. I'm going to bed. I'm like, bitch, your body works better than my kids because they don't do the fucking dishes. Like,
and what does that say about Bruce Willis?
Yeah, right.
It's like, he's like, look, I'm going upstairs, wash the goddamn – I cook dinner, yeah. You wash the goddamn dishes.
Look, coma bitch, I've been eating Totino's for 3 months. These guns ain't going to clean themselves. I got YouTube to watch.
He's like, look, I gotta go down to the murder basement and watch some YouTube. You clean up.
Look, you just been sleeping for 3 months. And I just thought it was weird too. Look, that's what I was telling my wife. I said, first of all, I don't know, Bruce Willis has always just played different levels of the same character. Like, if you watch Moonlighting and you watch Die Hard, you can draw a pretty straight line between those two. And I said, I don't know. At this point, this motherfucker just seems checked out. He just cashes checks.
Absolutely is, man.
He shows up for work. Like, it worked in Looper. It has not worked in a lot of places since then. But I said,
like, everything he does, he just looks bored. He's not even trying. He's just like, he expects to be Bruce Willis, and he expects for people to go watch the shit, and he expects to cash a check.
But I said, the daughter, I don't understand the direction. Like, the scene in the elevator, I said to my wife, I was like, okay, so she just came out of a coma, but she's not, like, brain damaged. I said, they had her acting like this skeezy motherfucker, the skeeziest, stank-ass motherfucker is in creepy ass motherfucker. Like, you would not want your child. If he stepped on the elevator with you, you would get the fuck off. Yep. That's how nasty this motherfucker is. He's on the elevator with you, and your daughter's in a wheelchair. And first of all, you know who he is, and he knows who you are. And he's all like, what happened? And she's all talking to him like he's her fucking first grade teacher. And she's all like, oh, I was hurt. And I'm like, does she not have, I mean, come on, even at her age, unless she was like homeschooled and lived in a bubble, she would have known, just unfortunately from existing in the world, what a skeezy dude looks like. And no amount of politeness would have made her interact with this nasty ass motherfucker the way that she did. And I was like, she's not brain damaged. She's not like, she didn't like wake up from a coma and be like, oh, is this in the 50s where every man is just a paragon of chivalry? I was like, what the fuck is that?
I know, like when he caught the elevator and got on with him and the door shut, the very next thing I expected to see was the scene of Bruce Willis boxing that motherfucker in the corner.
He was like trying to stab that bitch with a screwdriver. Yeah, exactly. And instead he's like, I got shot too. And I'm like, wait, you got shot? Shouldn't you still be in? Like, as I know healthcare is terrible nowadays, but it seems to me like she was in a coma. You just got shot. Why are you both getting a cab? Like,
same day release.
I'm like, people who have babies are in the hospital for longer than people who are in comas. Yeah. I mean, I remember when I saw the trailers for it, I just was like, I don't get it. I don't see the point. I don't get it. And having watched the movie, I feel the exact same way.
Same here. Yeah, it was pointless. I almost feel like somebody had a script for a completely different movie, and it was close enough to Death Wish, and they were like, well, hey, if we call it a remake and have Bruce Willis, then we'll make more money. Because the script is garbage.
Right. Yeah, and Eli Roth was like, well, I'll do that because it'll irritate people. Okay, whatever, dude. Right. Hey, you got paid, and I saw it, so joke's fucking on me, I guess.
I own the Blu-ray, so here we go.
Oh, my God, why would you do that? Why would you do that?
It was $4, man.
That doesn't matter. You could wipe your ass with those $4 and flush it down the toilet.
You're right. I get more entertainment.
All right, so let's shift to a different, better movie.
Yes, please.
Summer of 84, which is, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know if all this kind of nostalgia-themed supernatural / murder stuff can be entirely attributed to Stranger Things, but if it can, fucking God bless Stranger Things.
I agree. I'm sort of tired of that comparison because it seems like if you put any number of adolescents in a movie and set it in the 80s or a show and say the 80s, everybody's like, oh, it's Stranger Things, only this.
Right, and they just forget about, you know, fucking Stand By Me and every other coming of age movie that ever came out. But at the same time, if pitching things as it's Stranger Things but with a serial killer gets shit like this greenlit, then I'm fucking all for it. And I love Stranger Things. Don't get me wrong, I love Stranger Things. I think it is a direct result of how popular Stranger Things was, and to a lesser degree, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Summer of 84 is more, you know, independent, so I don't know how much it would depend on kind of that public consciousness. But hey, if it got the movie made, I'm all for it. So Summer of 84 is a movie set in 1984, where a group of kids in suburbia, I don't remember exactly where it was. There's some disappearances going around, some kids that are going missing. And one of the kids in the group thinks that he sees one of the missing kids in the kitchen of his extremely friendly next door neighbor, who also happens to be a police officer. And then he gets his buddies involved in trying to surveil the cop's house and find out exactly what was going on. And I love these movies because I love movies about kids, in this case boys, who are all together, who get a chance to act like stupid-ass boys. Yep. And it could be girls, too. I think this – I fucking hate when you have a movie with a 12-year-old or a 13-year-old just precocious as fuck and just super crazy high vocabulary and perfect manners. And like, that's not kids, right? Kids are gross, right? And they're dirty. Exactly. And they when they get together, that's especially boys, you know, one boy is stupid, two boys are exponentially more stupid, you know. Mm-hmm. Just the way the kids hang out when their parents aren't around and their adults are not around and they're still trying to figure out so much of what they feel being an adult is, whether it's real or not, you know, and sex and all that. Like, just the way kids talk to one another unguarded. I feel this movie just, man, it just fucking nailed it.
Absolutely.
And I think the 80s, I mean, it's a deep well that folks keep going back to, but it's also just from a technological standpoint and from a thematic – or not a thematic, a plot standpoint, it's easier to do a movie like this when everybody doesn't have cell phones. But there really was something about having one Playboy or one penthouse that you just – you had to keep going back to because you found it in the woods – and nobody ever put another one there. Like that, I mean, you know, that is one aspect, you know, nowadays where it's like when you have the internet, you know, and you've just got every fucking horrible thing that two adults can do to one another like at your fingertips.
It's free to watch.
Right. Like this idea of just, okay, we've got this one thing and we don't know how this works because it's just pictures and it's only half. So we kind of have to guess, like, but I mean, I feel like this movie just really nailed that aspect of just kids being friends and a summer that just felt full of possibilities and it felt like it would go on forever. And all you wanted to do was just hang out with your buddies.
Yep.
Yeah. And then the fact that on top of it, you know, there was a serial killer story was just even better.
Right. Like it was so, I don't know. It kind of, it's such a stretch, but this is just me personally. And this is how much I love Silver Bullet. It felt so much like watching Silver Bullet because you had a similar thing, only instead of a serial killer, there was a werewolf.
See, and I read Silver Bullet, I've seen it, but I haven't seen it in decades to where I would really remember it.
It's so it's such a summer movie. Like it's such a summer 80s movie.
Yeah.
And you know, it's the kids and he has his buddy and he's picking on his older sister, and his older sister resents him because he's in the wheelchair. So even though he just played a prank on her, she has to help him out of the car because the parents are like, are you going to help your brother?
And right. Shit. Right.
Like this movie was such an 80s, just summer kids being kids movie. And in the literal sense, there's a monster who is praying, and it's not a werewolf, it's a dude. But good God, man. Like, this is the kind of shit, if you're going to make a movie set in the 80s, like, this is what I want you to do.
Yeah, exactly. Because I do feel like, and maybe it's just here, I can't speak for everywhere, but I feel like, you know, as parents, we're so afraid to let kids be kids and just go out and ride their bike at night. Mm-hmm. Because like, you know, maybe you let your kid ride your bike at night and nothing happens to them, well, that's fine. But if something happens to them, the first thing, the first question is, why would you let your kids do that? Why would you let your kid go out at dark? Why would you let – and I'm like, man, we used to play fucking Ghosts in the Graveyard in pitch black. We'd run through the goddamn neighborhood. Like, I would go out and my wife sorry, my mom would be like, okay, I'll see you when I see you. Like, there's a comedian, and I forget who it was, but he has a bit where he talks about being a kid, and he says, you know, he going out at night, comes back, his parents are like, you in for the night? And he's like, nope, get my flashlight. And that's what it was like, you know, and that, that, and nowadays I feel like we're so scared, and understandably so, because, you know, in some respect, kids grow up so much faster because technology has allowed them to see things earlier than they're probably ready for. And so as a result, we don't necessarily let them be kids in the same way that you and I were allowed to be kids.
100%. I agree.
And so this movie still has that idea where you and some friends get some fucking walkie-talkies and go out late at night. You could ride your bikes out. You could go out, whatever, hanging out with your friends, searching for serial killers, whatever.
Just playing Manhunt and stumbling upon possible serial killers.
Right? Yes, absolutely. Just and the idea of like a neighborhood, like a neighborhood of kids who maybe when the sun's out don't really want anything to do with one another, but when it's dark and shit's scary, oh yeah, you'll pair up, no problem.
Hell yeah. When it's time to play Manhunt, shit's gonna pop off.
Exactly. Like. Right. Right. And I just and I know that, you know, I think you and I think it's a great, I mean, you don't want to, you know, obviously nostalgia is a lens that makes everything look better. Sure. But, you know, there's going to be a time, even just 10, you know, 20 years from now where you can't make a movie like this because 20 years from now, from then will be now.
Right.
And so I'm just, you know, honestly, the serial killer stuff I thought was great, especially, and I don't want to spoil it because I would like people to watch it. The movie did not end at all the way I expected it to do, to end. And I think which is really
we're not going to spoil it. This movie should not be spoiled. Like, just go into it, just watch this movie, especially if you're close to our age. But what I loved about it was how almost to the very end it played on, is Mr. Mackey or isn't Mr. Mackey?
Yes. Absolutely.
A killer, right?
Yep.
And then what it does is it has probably my favorite ending of any movie this year.
Yeah. No, this ending is great.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's great. And I mean, and it manages to do it all. There's no gore. There's no blood. There's no – you know, you could watch with – you know, if you have, you know, friends, family members that don't like horror movies, I wouldn't even call it a horror movie.
But, I wouldn't either.
It definitely deals with some bad stuff. But, you know, this is a movie that you could watch with really anybody and just enjoy it. And I think like I was 12 in 1984. And I remember going out and just fucking around. So I think that, you know, definitely probably hits a little, you know, closer to home for me.
Sure.
But you know, but it's just a good movie. It's just well told. You like everybody, you like all the kids.
That's exactly the thing. Like, people who bitch about being tired of the 80s thing or whatever. If the soundtrack annoys you, that's your shit, right?
Right.
But you cannot deny the fact that regardless of what year this is set in, and it's set in 84, like we talked about, for specific reasons for this story to work. But the fact of the matter is, it has characters you care about.
Yep.
It has a compelling story.
Yep.
And it's just a fucking good movie.
Right. And I like the parents. Like, it's just everything about it just felt – it felt very grounded. And I think for a movie like this to work, where, like you said, the is it or is it not – You know, is Mackie who he says he is or isn't? It has to be grounded for that really to be a question. Because otherwise, if you start like introducing, you know, all this weird shit, then it makes it, because you just naturally go, well, if all this weird stuff is introduced, then it, you know, probably is or probably is, you know, whatever. Right. And so for it to just to feel as grounded as it was really made you question things up until the point whether, you know, I'm sorry, up until the point till, you know, you kind of found out what was going on.
Yeah, because if it had established early on one way or the other, then the movie's just annoying and you just want it to be over.
Right, because like it, like you knew that Derry, first of all, if you know anything about Stephen King stories, sure, you know Derry's fucked up. But sure, you know, one other thing, and it's just a different type of thing, right? Like it, the important thing about it was to establish that this town is fucked.
Sure.
And it's been fucked for a while. And right, and the adults know it's fucked.
They already
and,
know it.
And they just kind of go along with it. Exactly. And whatever happens is just the price of doing business. And yep, that's not this movie. This movie is about just a regular neighborhood and these kids who don't know what's going on, whether something horrible is happening right in their neighborhood or not. And right, so, you know, and it just, yeah, it was great. Like, I really enjoyed it. I'm glad you told me about it because I would never have heard about it had you not mentioned it.
And the only reason I watched it was because these were the guys that did Turbo Kid.
Oh, okay. Which you like a lot more than I did.
Yeah, I fucking love Turbo Kid.
Yeah.
Turbo
Kid. And Darvin loves it too, Cinematological. Yeah. He was like, yeah, I think he tweeted out that, like, you know, Turbo Kid was a movie he'd been waiting for his whole life or something.
Good God, man. It's rad meets Mad Max.
Which I can't stand. Like, all that BMX extreme bullshit. Man, miss yes, me with that bullshit. Please. I can't fucking hate that.
Oh, dude. Listen, man. I grew up kneeling at the altar of rad.
Yeah.
And Mad Max.
Mad Max, I get.
Those together.
I was a little late to the party on Mad Max, but rad, no. I couldn't, no.
Fucking no. Rad is one of those movies that I will defend till the day I die. I watched that shit. I've probably seen Rad more times than fucking Bill Allen seen Rad. He's in it. Like, me and my brother. Like, he's fucking Crew Jones. Like, me and my brother would watch Rad on repeat in the summer. It was one of those tapes that we wore the fuck out.
Yeah.
Like, that is my shit. Hell Track? There's a real hell track. Somebody built that shit, like in North Carolina or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah, motherfucking bicycle, son. I'm fixing to ride hell track. I'll probably die.
I would love to be there to film it.
Like, the very first thing of hell track was this giant incline they went down into a ramp. Mm-hmm. I'm dead already.
You're off the side. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm done.
You're like, you want me to ride in a straight line at 50 miles an hour?
Look. You can put "He died on hell track" on my tombstone. I'm dying happy.
I'll make sure that happens. I'll get a little BMX bike engraved on the stone.
Oh, shit. Please do that.
Well, that makes sense, though, because, you know, there's, you know, for and I didn't dislike Turbo Kid. I didn't like it as much as you did. But there is definitely, like, these guys are keyed in to the 80s.
Yeah,
and I mean, old folks like us, we all look back, and I don't look back on the 80s and be like, everything was great. Like, I understand enough about it to know that shit wasn't, you know, whatever, but there was certain just kind of pop culture touch points that, you know, you just feel fondly about because they were part of what helped make you who you are right now.
You know? Absolutely.
Hopefully, although I worry for the kids who look back on like a Logan Paul video and be like, oh yeah, I remember that.
That's the thing, right? And it's specifically, sorry, I went Sepentor on you, but specifically. So, speaking to like this like, and it's almost, I think, sort of dwindling down a little bit, but it's like, everything here lately, especially if you watch a lot of indie like horror and indie movies like we do, so many things are 80s throwbacks, right?
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, logically you're thinking, what, 90s throwbacks are next, so we'll get the next Scream probably.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
What the fuck are people in 2028 going to throw back to?
I don't know.
Everything now is a throwback to 20 years ago.
Although, Searching. that's a movie I really want to see. One, I love John Cho. But this idea of a thriller just all composed of, you know, FaceTime, chat windows, all that stuff. It's supposed to be really, really good. And he's amazing in it. But that right there, that's your throwback.
Yeah. Like, you're right. And I don't know what the fuck that movie's about at all. But people have been talking about it online here lately. And so much so that I kind of was like, I've never even heard of it. What is this?
I saw a trailer for it. And I was like I said, I love John Cho. Season 2 of The Exorcist. I thought it was great.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I haven't seen that. But yeah. But yeah, you're right. It's like, what, Unfriended and...
Yeah, Unfriended. Yeah, yep, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. But that kind of, I don't know. And it's because I'm as old as I am. That doesn't interest me as a throwback in 20 years. Like, I don't know. I don't know what...
Well, I think for you and I don't know. Like you said, I don't know if community is the right word. But like, you know, when you and I were kids, if you wanted to get together with your friends, you had to... get together with your friends, right? Yeah. Like you couldn't, there's no way your parents were going to let you be on the phone all night long because right. If somebody else needed to call,
yeah,
they, you know, the phone line wasn't shit. Free.
At my house, yeah, my dad was a carpenter. Right. So
yes, so
that's
if
where
you
the jobs came from was the phone.
Right. So if you wanted to hang out with your friends, you had to physically go be with your friends. And I think there's a, mm-hmm. You know, there's a difference. And not to say that you can't still make good horror from what kids and young adults are kind of experiencing right now. I think it's just going to take time because sometimes it takes distance to be able to look back and figure out what to pull from
it. You're right.
And we're in it, right? I mean, honestly, 2018, we're fucking living a horror movie right now.
Fuck yeah.
I mean, right now. We're living it.
We talk about it almost daily.
Exactly. Like you can't get away from it, even if you wanted to. Like, like the cabin we're going to in Tennessee doesn't have Wi-Fi. I'm like, fucking thank you. Like, thank you. You know.
Sure.
So yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You know, kind of where horror goes in 10, 15 years from now. I think it's hard for us to because we're kind of, you know, we're living in the time that they're going to be drawing from. And so they're going to be able to make, you know, connections that we can't see right now because we're too close to it.
Right.
So.
100%. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
But yeah, so Death Wish, don't bother aside from morbid curiosity. Summer of 84, absolutely. Like if we have
I will say, to Death Wish's credit, if you somehow find yourself, you know, if you're watching the movie or if you just look it up on YouTube – there is one particular the garage scene.
Yeah,
I thought was when he becomes the Punisher for a few minutes.
Yeah, I mean if you
I like that.
If you watch it independent of the character he was portraying prior to and after that, then sure. Yeah,
sure.
If like, you watch it, like you said, watch it on YouTube where context doesn't matter.
Right, because I felt like it looked practical to me.
That was the Eli Roth I was expecting from the rest of the movie.
Exactly. Yeah exactly. That's the one Eli Roth scene. So if you watch, fast forward the rest of the bullshit, it's as cookie cutter as you can get.
Yep.
But that one scene is the Eli Roth scene, and it's worth watching.
Absolutely. Yep. I agree. All right. So next up, so we're going to have a bit, there might be a bit of a time stretch. We still need to figure it out. I'm going to be unavailable 2 weeks from now, but we're going to try to figure out how to do it. We may kind of skip, but we'll figure it out. But I think next up, probably the Predator.
Predator, for sure.
And we'll see if anything else kind of comes our way up until that point. Until then. This has been episode 54 of Divided by Werewolves, and thank you so much for hanging out with us, and we appreciate it.
I think it's 55, actually.
Is it? 50,
yeah.
I swore the last one was 53.
On the site, we have 53 twice.
Oh, my God. I'm so bad. I'm so bad at this.
55.
You're absolutely right. Oh, my God. You know what? I apologize, man. I've been doing...
who cares?
You're right. It's episode 55. God, I'm terrible. Absolutely.
No, nobody's listened to all 55 episodes.
That's not true. That is absolutely not true. You know, for a historical record and support, we get this right. So this has been episode 55. Thank you so much. The Vibro Werewolves. And so for myself and Mitch, we thank you so much for hanging out with us. Of course, you can always follow us on Twitter, follow us on Twitch, you know, catch the streams, whatnot. And we appreciate you hanging out with us tonight, and we hope you'll be with us the next time we're around. So for myself and Mitch, thank you again. Good night, and have a good evening.